You guys know I'm all about making our lives as easy as possible in sobriety. Well, you can eat stress-free this spring with Factor Meals, and they're offering my listeners 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month with code HAPPIEST50. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted and dietitian approved. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options plus more than 60 different add-ons. What I love so much about Factor is that I've never been someone who makes time for cooking, but with Factor, I have delicious meals ready to go and on the table in just 2 minutes, so I can get back to doing what I want with my time without the hassle of any prep, cooking, or cleanup, a total godsend. Factor's also celebrating Earth Day all month long, so look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/happiest50 and use code happiest50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code happiest50 at factormeals.com/happiest50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors in our lives, and when we get sober, they can almost feel magnified at first because we're adjusting to feeling all our feelings again rather than using alcohol to numb them. I was honestly really surprised when I got sober at how many emotions came up for me. I remember literally saying, "I have so many feelings right now," and it felt really overwhelming having to feel them all. But the great thing about that is that it gave me the clarity and awareness that I had some things to work through, like people-pleasing and like my own self-talk. That's where therapy can be so helpful, because it's a safe space to get things off your chest and begin to work through what's been weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. What I really love about BetterHelp is that it's entirely online. All you have to do is fill out a questionnaire and you'll be matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime with no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/happiest today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/happiest. Hello everyone, welcome to Happiest Sober Podcast. I am so freaking excited to be sharing this episode with you today because this week I'm chatting with Kelly Yu. Kelly is a content creator who I absolutely love. I've been following her for years and years, so this one was honestly a pretty big fangirl moment for me. And the way that this interview came to be was actually pretty serendipitous, so you'll hear us chat about that in the first few minutes. But I originally followed Kelly years ago because her account was very focused on body image, which was something that I was really struggling with at that time, and she was recovering from eating disorders and sharing about that. So just a little content warning that that is something that we touch on, but I just kind of got to watch her journey evolve over the years. And then shortly after I got sober, I saw her post that she had gotten sober. So it's been really cool kind of following along with that in real time. So I was super excited to get to chat with her about it and hear a little bit more about all of that in depth. Kelly is going on 4 years sober this year, and she doesn't drink alcohol, but the thing that she really got sober from was weed. So she used weed for 10 years and she really used it to numb. So that's something that we chat quite a bit about, is sort of having to sit with feelings again, having to just kind of be with ourselves again in sobriety. We also talk about friendships. We talk about letting go of worrying what other people think about us. We kind of talk about our identities changing in sobriety and in recovery as well. We touched on so much in this conversation. It was such a fun one. I absolutely love her. It was so inspiring, and I know you're going to take so much away from it just like I did. So with that being said, I won't make you wait any longer to hear it. So here is my chat with Kelly Yu. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
So good. I can't believe we're finally meeting. It's time.
Yes, I'm so, so excited that you're here. I was just telling you, I've followed you for like, I think 5 or 6 years now, and I absolutely love everything you do. And I originally followed you for your like eating disorder recovery, like body image content, because that was a thing for me like far before alcohol ever was. And then I saw you shortly after I got sober. I saw you post about getting sober. And so it's been so fun to kind of follow along on your journey with that.
Well, it's wild because did I message you or I sent you a DM? I can't remember. I followed you. Did I respond to your story?
I think you, okay, yes. So I had drafted a message
like
to invite
ago.
You. Yes. I drafted a message to invite you on this podcast because I've wanted you on here for like a year, and I finally worked up the courage because it was such a fangirl moment for me. Drafted a message the next day. I hadn't hit send yet. The next day you followed me and like replied to my story, and I was like, this was such insane universal timing.
That makes no sense. And I think that nothing is a coincidence. Like, that cannot be a coincidence.
Right.
But we were chatting so much before this. We're like, we have to record.
Yes.
We're already having so many overlaps. It's ridiculous.
I know. I love it. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm so, so excited. To start off, what is your sober date? How long have you been sober?
Oh, June 21st, 2020.
Oh, right before your birthday too.
Yes.
Ah.
Literally 8 days before my birthday. What was yours?
Mine was November 8th, 2020.
Oh my God.
So a few months after you. Yeah. Okay. So you're coming up on 4 years soon.
Yes.
That is insane. Okay. And so we were just chatting about this, but you don't drink, but your main thing, your thing was weed that you really got sober from, right? So did you quit those at the same time? Like, how did that kind of unfold?
So the first thing I ever did was, like, I grew up in Chicago. I went to a city school. Like, everyone loves to party in high school. I'm sure as most of you guys did too, like everyone. And I had been introduced to both kind of at the same age, but my first access was like crappy vodka in a water bottle before a school dance and getting hammered, blacked out, and then getting taken home, throwing up in a cab, and this guy that my dad didn't know dropping me off at the front door.
That was your first time ever drinking?
That was the first time I ever got blacked out.
Okay, okay.
And like, drinking wasn't a problem though. Like, that sounds problematic, but I think for teenagers, you're just like, if you ever get your hands on it, you want to go crazy and you want to fit in. But I hated the taste always.
Yeah.
I would just do it because it's to be cool. And like, you want to be silly and like reckless. And in college, I already had stopped drinking really. I just didn't like it. I'm also Asian, so I get the Asian flush, and I get quite sick sometimes. Like, I get very red and hot and itchy, and I don't feel good. So that was never a problem really, but I did force myself a lot to do it when I didn't want to. And that's why I became so in love with smoking weed. Weed didn't have any of those effects.
Interesting.
You know, it started when I was in high school. I was dating my first boyfriend who broke my freaking heart. He literally destroyed me. Aww. He started talking to an underclassman and literally stopped talking to me after 2 years of dating and acted like I didn't exist for the rest of high school. I'm not even kidding.
He ghosted you before ghosting was really a thing?
Yeah, and he literally looked through me. Like, we were in the same homeroom.
That's terrible.
And you know what's funny? Not funny. But this is satisfying for me as a girl who was hurt, okay?
Yes.
Years later, I think this was when I was 25, I get a random phone call. And this person goes, is this Kelly? I'm like, yeah. And they were like, this is blank. And I was like, how do you know my phone number? And he said, I remember it because when I memorized it in high school.
Oh my God. Why was he calling you though?
I thought he was like, you know, so he was really kind. He was like, I'm really sorry, like, for how I treated you and stuff. And then I ended up telling my sister, and she's like, oh, he was making amends. I was like, what amends? She was like,
oh,
he's totally in a program and he's making amends. And I was like, oh, well, whatever. That healed me. But you know, like, he literally, because he destroyed me. And like, your first heartbreak, maybe I was just really sensitive, but like, it killed me. And to be discarded, like, he literally acted like I was dead.
Like, no conversation, no explanation. No. Oh, it's terrible.
I know. And we had the same birthday. Isn't that freaking weird?
Oh, my God.
I know. So anyway, he introduced me. No, he didn't introduce me, but I knew he was, like, drinking and smoking. He was trying to be in the cool crowd and stuff. And so I also kind of got into weed, like, with other people. And it was just, like, the thing to do in high school. I don't know. Like, just bored kids. And then in college, I was struggling a lot. The adjusting to college was really tough. I thought I'd gone to really smart high school, but college is, like, another beast. Like, I was like, oh my God, everything is my responsibility. I had lots of debt. I had a job. I was washing dishes in the dining hall. I had an internship. Like, I was just drowning. Like, I couldn't find my footing, and I developed really bad binge eating disorder. Yeah. And so smoking weed was my way of just dealing, or not dealing, actually, and kind of an excuse to keep binge eating and numbing out. And then I ended up dating a person on and off for 7 years who was highly addicted to it, and we just bonded over it, and we're basically like two broken teenagers getting high, and I eventually left that really abusive relationship and kept smoking weed. Like, it was just such a big part of my life. And I think it also just became a lot of my identity. Like, I liked being the cool girl who liked to smoke weed, and I liked knowing, like, it was my thing, and I felt like I was in control of it, but I wasn't.
Yeah. That, like, association of the identity is such a huge thing, I feel like. Like, we were talking kind of before we hit record about having to grieve, like, when you get sober, having to grieve, whether it's alcohol, weed, whatever. But it's also grieving, like, a sort of an identity, like, your sense of, like, I'm the party girl. I'm the girl who likes to do this, right?
Oh, you know what's so cringe about who I used to be? When my friends would ask me, like, after I got out of that relationship, I really did a lot of inner work and therapy, and I wouldn't bring up my weed. Even though I had mentioned it a couple times, well, that goes to show you, like, you're hiding something, you know? And weed is not wrong. I think it's so cool that people can enjoy it. I just actually didn't enjoy it. I needed it. I needed it. So I remember when my friends would ask me, though, like, if you ever start to date again, like, what kind of person? I would, the first thing I would say is that they have to smoke weed. What?
Interesting. Yes.
What is that? What are you talking about?
I totally relate. I felt that way too. Like, it was, it mattered to me if someone was a drinker, because when that's what you do, that's like your sense of, like, connection, relaxation, bonding with somebody, right?
Yeah. I was like, what are we going to do together? And I am like, oh, I can't even imagine bonding over something like that. But I lived like that for like 10 years. Like, literally, I would be like, let's get high together, friend, boyfriend. Everyone.
Yeah. So when do you think that you started, like, I feel like, you know, for me with drinking, I knew in my gut for so long before I was ready to think about it. And I feel like I would, like, kind of feel like, oh, this isn't good, and then ignore it. And then that voice gets louder. Like, when do you think you started really thinking, like, this isn't a good thing?
I remember when I first started doing it, I was social. Like, I'd hang out with friends and we'd be goofy and we would, like, have the munchies together and watch movies. That's not what it became like during college and after. I was doing it in solitude, and I was doing it because I was not happy that day and I wanted to stop feeling whatever was going on, and I needed it. Like, if I ran out, the panic that would ensue internally for me, I'd need to find another source immediately. I always had to have a supply. I would be so excited to go home from work and get high.
Yeah.
I could not wait. And I was like, I don't even feel like I'm choosing it. I'm drawn to it like a compulsion. Like, I'm not even having fun when I'm high. I'm not even silly. I'm not happy. I'm becoming depressed and really, really antisocial. And I literally did quit cold turkey.
Wow. How is that? Like, and how did you, like, what made you wake up that day and be like, I'm actually done?
So June 2020 was during the pandemic, and I was living alone, and it was also not that much longer after I had gone through my really toxic relationship and breakup. And like many people who are codependent and haven't done the proper healing, aka me at the time, I ended up dating someone else 6 months later who also ended up, I found out, was an addict. And I'm like, can you, like, what, like, and I didn't even know. And this time it was like, they used to be like a coke addict, and then I found out he was addicted to porn and weed and drinking. And I was like, I can't. And I felt really triggered because my other partner had also a lot of those problems that also led to, like, cheating and stuff. And I just didn't want to deal with that anymore. So I think meeting him, though, was a good way to reflect on myself. I'm like, all right, well, I don't want that. And now I'm heartbroken over that, even though I don't want that in my life. And now I'm coding it again with weed. I live alone. I'm always miserable. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I remember having therapy, I think the day after, it was like weekly. And I told her, I was like, I quit. And she was like, well, I'm glad you're even talking about it, because you never talk about it with me. I'm like, yeah, exactly. She was like, makes sense you're bringing it up now because you finally quit. I was like, yes.
Yeah, isn't that how it goes though? Like, I was not ready to talk about it with anyone until I was actually ready to quit. Because if you're not ready to quit, you don't want to hear it from them.
Yeah, and like, don't try to control me. I would like to mess up my own life and not be told that I'm messing it up.
Yes.
Like, you're going to piss me off. Leave me alone.
So how did it go? You quit it cold turkey. Like, what did really you did. Do? What did you yeah. do to quit? And like, how did those early days go for you?
So in my apartment, I literally had like a dedicated little like shelf in my kitchen. Like, you know, the cabinets you like open up, like turn it. And it's like at eye level. And I had like one shelf that had all my paraphernalia, like the flower, the bud, the vape pens, the oil cartridges. I literally put it all in the bag. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to like put it in a bag and like put it in the other room. Cause I had the room that, there were still two rooms cause my ex-boyfriend had moved out, the really bad one, not like the other addict weirdo that I dated after that. Sorry guys. I mean, they're not listening to this, but they were all like, just, we were all unwell, including yeah. myself. Okay.
Right.
So not just them. And I remember just going like, I can just put it in the other room. And I wasn't tempted to use it because I had a friend still who was able to enjoy it a lot. Like, he was actually a normal person. And I was going back to Chicago that weekend, so I just gave it all to him. And I wasn't tempted to go use it. I'm not wow. – I don't know. I think – and that's not for everyone. That's not everyone's experience. But I think when you get so resentful of something that you didn't even know you hated but you needed and then you thought you loved, it's just like, ugh. Like, it gave me the ick.
Wow.
But I didn't miss the numbing, that's for sure. I missed the okay. numbing, but I didn't want to do it to myself.
Do you think too, like, you know, going back to you had been like an eating disorder recovery for a while. Yes. Did like those things really go hand in hand for you? Like,
getting high allowed me to binge eat without guilt, as so I thought. Like,
okay.
You're like, I'm smoking weed so I can be numb, so I can engage in my coping mechanisms of binge eating and be totally checked out. I think that's what motivated me for a long time to continue smoking weed, because I wasn't ready to stop binge eating. And like, now I can't imagine doing either, but I had had an eating disorder since I was 10 years old. I was anorexic. No one, my parents are Asian. They didn't really know how to handle it. Like, it's just not part of any generation. Like, I feel like most of our parents in general didn't really understand how to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And so I developed binge eating and I just couldn't stop. I felt very out of control of my life. I was miserable. I hated myself. I hated my life. I didn't want to continue going on. I was like, I just would rather just be numb at all times. So if I'm not eating, I'm high. And why not just combine them?
Wow. And then, so when you like quit, you didn't necessarily miss it. You sort of had that like 180 of like, okay, I feel resentful. It gives me the ick, but you did yeah. miss the numbing. So how did you start coping with that gone?
Well, I remember the first night of not getting high. I was like laying down, getting ready for bed. And I was so like, I almost felt afraid. Like, I had noticed that I live alone because I was high all the time at night at home by myself. So I never was even aware, like, oh, you live alone. Like, oh, you are by yourself. Oh, it's dark in here. Like, I know this all sounds really strange, but it's not that like getting high makes you delusional. It just allows you to really just not be present. So when yeah. you have to be present and grounded, you just notice things like, oh, look at the wall, look at the ceiling. Oh, it's dark in here. Oh, it's just me. It just allows you to notice stuff. And I didn't want to before. So I was like very like almost like, I was like, I don't want to be with me. And like, how sad is that? Like, I'm just like by myself. That's so weird. And that told me a lot. And I think that was actually motivation to not keep doing it. Like, you would think, oh, that would make me run back to it. But like, just noticing how delusional I was when I was high all the time, I was like, whoa, dude, you don't even know what is going on.
Oh, that's so interesting. It's like noticing the feelings that you were numbing.
Mm-hmm. And then because I had like experience in therapy for many years dealing with other stuff, that I was like, you can't pretend like this isn't it. So you have to face it. Like, I feel like for so many people in life, once you wake up, you just can't go back to sleep. Like, what am I just going to pretend? I didn't notice that?
Oh, that's my God. Weird. It's so true. I had that exact same moment of like at a certain point being like, oh, there's no going back now. Like, I know too much. I have acknowledged this. I've said it out loud. And even this feeling of like, even if I were to go back, it would never be the same because I know too much.
Exactly. And that is the benefit of us wanting to tell ourselves the truth, because we weren't always in that position. I wanted to deny on denial and denial. And that's just growth, growing up and becoming more honest with yourself. It's very hard to do. But when you put it in practice, it unfortunately becomes easier, which fortunately makes your life better, but it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, yes, it's hard, but life actually gets so much easier when you stop lying to yourself. It's exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And expensive.
Right.
Like, weed and alcohol is so expensive.
Yes.
No thanks.
Right? Oh my God, but it's so true. It's that, like, it's hard, but it's easier than the hard of continuing with that, right? Yeah.
It's like I'm always having a freaking high hangover, and then I have to try to do stuff. Like, ugh, like what energy I was putting into it.
Mm. Yes, such an energy suck. Can I ask, and this is me being so clueless because I smoked weed a handful of times in university and while I was wasted, and I never got into it. But what is a high hangover like?
I mean, I just think it makes you like, for me personally, everyone's different, but weed just makes me like, I want to just melt into a couch and be useless. And I know people say sativa versus indica. Yeah, no, I know. I would buy strains specifically, but everyone has different, you know, chemical makeup in their brain. At the end of the day, it's taking in a substance and it's how it interacts with your neurotransmitters. Like, right. As annoying as that is, like, no one is going to be the same. And so for me, it would just make me like a lazy, tired, unmotivated version of myself, and I'd just be like lazy, and it validates you being lazy because you genuinely feel lazy.
Yes, it like gives you permission.
Yes, that's and that's what it is. I love that you said that, because my whole life I've never, and I've worked through this so much, to like, it's very hard for me to be still without guilt that only I put on myself. And it's like super unproductive. So I feel like I would need weed to do that, except it's still not accepting that I like giving myself rest. It's like a forced rest under a substance. So you're not ever being grounded and present in your choices.
Yes. Oh, I relate to that so much. Like, I struggle to give myself days of just like doing nothing. I actually was just talking about this in like last week's episode, how hard it is for me to like give myself permission to do nothing. But when you were hungover, that felt like the permission slip. Yes. And I had someone tell me one time online, like, I give myself fake hangover days. Like the way that we would take like, you know, a Sunday to be hungover. Like, I just like embody that, but without the hangover. And I'm like, I feel like I need that energy.
That is the best way to describe, though, still how the mindset is that we have to have an excuse to have calmness
and
grace for ourselves. It's not even, I just want to be lazy on the couch. I don't know if you've noticed this, but like when I feel like I should my current therapist, I just started EMDR, which is a specific like trauma therapy that helps with memories and things that just like don't really go away. And I was like never really wanting to do it, but I finally felt ready to. So anyway, a lot of her is just training you how to have really good habits every day that is self-care. So like, I hate doing this stuff, but I force myself to do it. The meditating, the positive affirmations, the journaling. Every day I wake up, I freaking dread it, but I feel good doing it and after, but I also hate every second of it.
Right.
And that's okay. And I think what I've learned is that, what was I saying? What sorts of started this?
So permission to like let yourself rest and do nothing.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay.
Guys, I have ADHD up the butt. And one morning, I just really didn't want to do it. And my therapist said, if you really don't want to, you can literally write in your journal, like, my therapist making me. But I didn't do that. I just wrote, like, have grace for yourself in this moment. And that allowed me to literally start doing it. Like, I don't know what, like, I really don't want to do it. And I think I get annoyed by it. And I get annoyed by the prospect of doing it. And then I get anxious. It's literally 5 minutes.
Oh my God. The amount of things I put off that actually only take a few minutes that I feel better after. It's like the buildup, like working ourselves up to doing them, right?
And I have learned to realize, like, I actually just have like low self-worth that I'm working on, that I don't feel like I need these things or should want or need these things for myself. So it's like, it all sounds so silly, but all this therapy or like meditation affirmation stuff, it's so annoying when you realize how real it is. And it's like, gosh, I judge myself for like not wanting to, or I judge other people for being silly when it's like actually the most authentic thing. Like, I'm like, oh, so silly. I'm like, is it though? Or are you just like really ignorant?
Right. You know what? I saw you on your story not that long ago saying like, I've been doing these things.
Yeah.
And like, I hate that it's helping, but it is, kind of thing. Yeah. And that inspired me because it's always my goal. I am always talking about how I'm always trying to get a consistent morning routine with like exactly those things, like meditating, gratitude journal. And seeing you say that was like a good reminder for me. So I've been trying to get back at that too.
Well, and just know every morning I literally go, oh, and then I just force. I'm not just kidding. I like put my AirPod Maxes on and I say, just do it. I hate it.
Yeah.
But slowly, just like with everything else, you learn, it becomes more part. It's not part of me. So yeah, I don't really like it. Because it's having to connect with the self. My whole life I didn't do that. So what? Of course I hate it.
Yes. And it's like we avoid with, you know, food, substances, now with our phones, technology, like it's not really that comfortable to just be with ourselves.
No. And it's so beneficial. Like it's annoying how much you realize you need it. So whoever's listening, like you don't have to do it. But when you do it, you'll be like, wow, I hate how well it works.
Oh, did you have any things like that that you did to get you through like your first like year when you first stopped?
No.
You just kind of sat with it? Did you just like let yourself feel everything? And like, how was the experience of your first like 6 months to a year?
When I, you know, it's crazy. I don't even really remember that much. I think because like I was still really reeling from that relationship. And I think by being sober, I had actually really faced it in a lot of, I had therapy every week. So I feel like a lot of it was dealing with the aftermath of like trauma I hadn't dealt with, because that relationship was insane. I mean, he broke me into a billion pieces. Like he really taught me and would say to me, like, you think anyone's ever gonna put up with you? Like, do you think anyone's ever going to want you? And like, he would go to like sleep with other people and literally I'd be like on my knees crying and he would look at me and be like, I don't understand why you're crying. But for me, I was young when I met him. So I had been trained. I knew it was not normal.
Right.
I knew, but I didn't know anything else.
Yeah. You can see it clearly when you're out of it, but when you're in it, it's a totally different story.
Yeah, and I met him when I was 19, so I felt like he was half of me and I didn't have a good sense of self at all. And so I chose to stay and deal with it just because I don't think I didn't feel like I deserved anything. So I think facing all of that sober was kind of where my focus was. I don't remember really doing anything helpful besides surviving, honestly. I think I barely remember it either. I think what's cool, and you probably feel this way too, just being like sober now, you're like, I feel like this is just my life. Like, you know, all this happened and like, you remember it, you'll have like thoughts or things, but like overall it's like, damn, life is like pretty nice. Pretty nice.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, you didn't necessarily get like quit and then be like, let me focus on staying sober. It was rather that like staying sober gave you the clarity and presence to work through this other stuff that you had to work through.
Mm-hmm. And mind you, I smoked weed literally like every day for 10 years, basically. Yeah. So I think that I had just worn it out so much. Like, you know, maybe if it was like 5 years in or 7 years in, 8 years in, it would have been much harder for me to quit. But I think it just got to such a point where I was like, dude, I'm going to move on. But it took me 10 years. Like, took me 10. It was fun. Then it wasn't. Then it really wasn't. Then it really, really, really wasn't. You know?
Yeah. You just got to that point of, like, being done. Like, being sick of your own shit, kind of.
Yeah. I was sick of my own shit. And I just wanted better. Yeah. As I'm sure you did, too. It's like, I don't. What's the purpose in doing that? When you learn that there is not a great reason, it's like, well, how am I going to go again?
Mm-hmm. And also, like, something we were talking about before we recorded is that we both got sober during, like, COVID and being locked down. And so it was very much just, like, such a ritual, such a habit in our day of, like, that was what we did.
I know. And you're so right, though, about, like, I mean, social media is a drug.
Mm-hmm.
That's permissible and allowed, especially as a creator. Like, you're literally rewarded for creating, sharing, posting, having high engagement, which gives you insane endorphins, yeah, adrenaline. It's like a drug also.
It's hard to navigate, right?
Yeah. And you know, I'd prefer it to what I did, but, like, neither is better or worse. Like, they all have an addictive thing. And I think that's also why I wanted to be more honest about what I was going through. So at least if I was engaging in social media so much, I would try to use it as a tool to be a positive influence, but also keeps me accountable. Like, yes, by announcing it, it's real.
Yeah. I was actually going to ask, like, you, I think I remember you waited a few months before you, like, posted about it. So yeah. What was that like of, like, when you decided, like, okay, I'm going to share this publicly? 'Cause you, like, you have a big platform. So that must have been a scary thing.
Well, I felt embarrassed the whole time. I mean, I'd been hiding it from everyone I'm connected with online forever. Right. Like, that's not really brand friendly, first of all. And I don't want to encourage people to do that. Like, obviously my personal life, people know I liked it to do it, but I noticed that I thought it would be shameful to post about it. And not that smoking weed's bad. Great. Cool. But the way I was doing it, and I wouldn't want someone to live the way I was living. Mm-hmm. So when I announced it, I was scared because I was like, I don't think anyone even would know I'm, like, a serious pothead.
Right.
And that's the sad part about when you're struggling, is you don't want anyone to know because you feel so insecure about it. Like, I wouldn't want anyone to know. So I only felt happy to announce when I was sober. And that's kind of, like, a sad thing, is, like, only until you're in a positive place that you feel proud of yourself. Like, I didn't announce when I quit because it was, like, nothing, you know, it's like, I haven't made a day. But to me, like, in my own personal life, like, every day in my calendar, I mark it for myself. Like, I was definitely celebrating for myself.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's a good thing too about, like, keeping things separate. But I do know that I felt embarrassed. So I would never want to share it with them unless I was a success story, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, no, I get that. When I started sharing online, I had, like, I started my account as, like, an anonymous account. Like, I didn't put my face on it for, like, 6 months. I was like, God forbid anyone sees this.
It's scary.
Mm-hmm. It totally is.
What made you feel confident enough to put your name and your face to your words?
You know what? It's so funny. I was chatting about this recently with a friend, but I used to have just, like, such this fear of being seen, like, online at all. And I think once I hit 6 months, I was ready to put my face on it, but I still wasn't ready for, like, anyone in my life to know that it existed. It was like, I blocked some people. Like, I blocked coworkers. No, like, did you do the same when you started?
Oh, I still have people blocked.
Okay.
Like, from, like, work and stuff. Like, yeah. I used to work academia, and, like, mind you, they know, like, whether you've blocked people or not, they know,
right?
There's no hiding it. Like, I remember getting asked one time and I was like, huh? Like, pretending like I really didn't hear them.
You feel like you've been, like, found out, right?
Yeah, because, like, everyone's phones are just, like, connected. Like, what are you gonna do about it? You know, like, you're not, it's pretty hard to get away from. So, but, like, I think I compartmentalized it so much. And I think that's also why I felt very relieved to, after, like, 7 years of working in that same academic research job, to go full time. Like, as a creator, that felt very freeing because I literally felt like I was like Hannah Montana.
Yes. Which I totally get that.
Fun. It was not glamorous. I felt something that I now in my life I'm very proud of what I do, but I felt really like ashamed and lame because in academia, like that's like a different So I hid a lot, just like you said. Like a lot of my life was hiding and I didn't like that.
Yeah. So when do you think, you know, speaking of like shame and like you said, you were really embarrassed to come out as being sober online. Like when do you think that embarrassment and shame subsided?
Well, I'd be lying if I didn't say that validation is great. Like when people say they're proud of you and like social media and pouring in. But I think in that circumstance, as a human being, we should allow certain types of validation in. Not everything has to be like negative. Like the connotation of needing validation as a human being, a lot of people are like, I wish I didn't need it. Humans are literally built upon relationships. We are here to connect and then die. That's literally we're here to procreate, connect, and die. And so our versions of that now is like, we want people to celebrate our wins or support us in our struggles. And I think just knowing a lot of people were rooting for me didn't make me feel like so confident, but it made me confident knowing I'm going to keep going in the journey. Mm-hmm. Like it didn't make me feel like a cool person, but I was like, now I can't go back.
Right. It is and accountability when you share it publicly.
And I think every human being really benefits from someone knowing you're something. Even like I know now I live with my boyfriend and living alone versus now living with someone, it's night and day because even when he travels a lot for work and like I have to remind myself to like show up, like be more of a presence, like maybe talk to myself. But like when you live alone every freaking day, you're like dead. Me, a lot of people are great living alone and maybe have like very fulfilling like social lives and get out every day. That wasn't me. So I had to really teach myself how to like show up.
Yeah, I relate. I lived alone for a few years and it can be really isolating for sure. But I love what you said that like it's not a bad thing. Obviously there's different types of like validation, but it's not bad to for it to help you if someone says I'm proud of you. Like that's really what it is a sense of community.
Yeah, and you need a team. Nothing great in life has been done alone. Let's just it's not possible. And that's hard too, because I have been alone a lot of my life and fighting alone. And when I think about all those things and I never let anyone in because of shame or embarrassment, or I simply didn't have friends or felt like I couldn't make them, like I should have put more effort into it because I think my life would have been much better.
Yeah, it's absolutely like that connection. And you seem like, I was going to ask, you seem like you live a pretty social life now. Like I've seen you post reels about like socializing sober. Like how does that go for you?
You know, it's really funny. I feel like, and tell me if you feel like this too, like what kind of kid were you? Were you like a very confident kid? Like did you have a lot of friends? Like what were you like as a kid?
I was actually a really loud kid. Like I was a pretty chatty, talkative kid, but once I got like school age, I think once I got to like high school years, that was when I got really insecure and like retreated.
Literally same.
Really? Same.
I watch home videos from when I was a kid and I was always jumping like a bouncing bean, singing, being so silly, always laughing. Like I could be on a little trampoline in our little living room. Like we grew up without like really any money, so we always had to make our own fun. Like we would play the drums on pillows with chopsticks, like, and I was just always excited about everything. And then there was a lot of chaos between my parents and in the home, and I think as kids you absorb that, so I started to just really crumble and become very fixated on hating my body. And I'd been called, you know, unattractive and chubby by other boys at school. Cause I mean, in their eyes, like, you know, you're a kid, you don't know. And like, I wasn't the cutest, so it's fine, whatever. But like, no one should hear that to their face.
And I've seen you pictures and you are adorable.
No, but a little kid, but you know how it is. There's certain ages that are never getting posted.
Okay. Yes. I went through my awkward phases too.
Yeah. Like I'm never posting anything between 12 and 13.
Okay. Yes.
But before then, oh, and then you're like, oh, I get it. I get why people would call her ugly. Like boys, immature boys. Okay.
Yes.
And I always felt insecure as a kid. And I think that I was always way too sensitive, and I was not able to be a good friend to people because I was so consumed with my own intrusive thoughts. Like, I'd always be like, I hope they like me. I hope they like me. And like, that's right. not attractive. Like, if you want to have friends, you're interested in them. Like, I've had to learn, like, it's not about you. It's about connecting with them. And so before LA even, I had literally not one friend in my college town. Mm. I'm not kidding. I hung out with no one ever.
That's hard.
I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
And it was embarrassing because my sister is like a year older and she's so social, has like a billion friends, right? And then when I moved to LA, I had my boyfriend, and like, yes, through social media you can meet people, but it's hard to make consistent friendships in a new city. And, you know, I would try and click with certain people and I would still get two in my head. So over the last 2 years, I've really learned how to just chill out, be more consistent of a friend, make plans and connect with them. Stop thinking about yourself. Like, and that was always hard for me because sure, it comes out of a place of insecurity, but like, that's still pretty self-centered to be like, I hope they like me. Stop.
But I think that's so human and relatable. Like, I feel like that is just the human experience, is like coming away from a social interaction and being like, oh my God, did they like me? Did I say the wrong thing? Like that voice. And it's realizing.
Can you believe some people are not like that?
Yeah, that's wild.
Like, they walk away and be like, that was fun. And then they go on.
Right.
And I've learned how to do that now. I train myself to be like, because I'm like, what's the purpose of going down that road? Like, just accept things for how they are, and reading into it has no purpose. It's really just for you, and that you don't like it anyway, so just don't do it.
So how did you train yourself? How did you start to like work through that when you would have those thoughts of like anxiety of like, do they like me?
Well, I notice it like in myself, and I'm like, oh, I can see that you're doing that. Like, I think that applies to a lot of things. Like, you know, when you are having any intrusive thought or insecurity, not just with friend stuff, but I think what helps is you look at yourself and you go in your head. I kind of go, oh, I can see that you're doing that. I'm like, let's just not.
You're just like, interrupt it kind of.
Yeah. And I go, it makes sense. Like I say, it totally makes sense that you want to do that, and let's not. And sometimes it doesn't perfectly stop there. So I'll just like kind of vent to my boyfriend, and then you get, or like a friend, and then you get someone to give you positive reinforcement that you don't need to go down that route. So sometimes you can't fully control it from yourself. Then you just vocalize it again and try to have someone help you get back to reality. And like, or maybe you did mess up their interaction. Okay, cool. Move next.
Yeah, life goes on, right?
Yeah, like no one really cares that much but you.
Because everyone's too busy doing the same thing. Everyone's too busy worrying about how they're coming across.
And also, if someone doesn't like you, they're just going to move on too. Like, they're not that mad about it.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Like, such a good reminder, because it's so easy to get caught up in those things.
It's also a control thing. It's like trying to get in control of like the situation. And like, I'm going to make sure I understand this. It's like, what if you just gave up control and just let it be?
That's good. Tough. Yeah, that is.
It's so hard.
Wow. Okay. And so do you feel like you've found your good group of friends like in LA, or you've made good friendships, or it's still a work in progress?
Definitely work in progress. Mm-hmm. I know, even since I was little, I was like always – my mom's also like this too. I think we both have just struggled with insecurity.
Yeah.
And like, we've always just like wanted to fit in. And so unlearning operating from that way and just wanting to connect has allowed me this year, especially like the tail end of last year and this year, for me to really invest and like try to pick right people and like say, hey, like every week, let's like grab coffee. And it's not always easy, but like, I definitely don't have a girl group. And like, I've learned to like not try to be here or there. Like, I just want to stay open to people and make sure that they feel like I'm interested in them.
Yeah.
That's what everyone wants in a consistent friend.
Yeah. I love that. I know, I don't have a girl group either. I have like a few individual friends that I'm really close with, and that's kind of it for me.
Yeah, and I think that's honestly more normal. And like, I think just staying open and interested in other people is like my mm-hmm. literal motto. I just try to be like, just think about them and like catch up with them. It's all about them and the friendship.
Yeah. And what's your experience? I feel like you go to like events and stuff. Like, what's your experience going as like a sober person?
Yeah. You know what? In LA, I don't go to anything that's like, so a lot of people have, I think it's very easy when you're outside of LA to view it as a certain thing. Like, there definitely is the world of like partying and clubbing for sure. Yeah. I have never even been in those environments, and I live in LA. Just like in any city, there's a million different areas, and LA is humongous. So a lot of times the way that people are thinking about Hollywood and stuff is like, first of all, never really even happens in Hollywood. It's like in the hills or something. And that's like a very specific way of life. You know, I will go to events, but I only go to events that really have nothing to do with drinking. Like, and a lot of more events are centered around like non-alcoholic drinks or mocktail night or like wellness events. That is the cool thing about being in LA. A lot of it is wellness centered versus like back in Chicago where I'm from, all you do is eat pizza and get drunk. Like, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But like, I don't fit in there. Like, you literally just do bar crawls and like, that's totally cool. But like, that's just not the socialization I get along with. So like for here, I try to make friends plans. Like, we go to a class and then get like coffee or breakfast. That's really like what I do. Yeah. But yeah, events, like, I think you can really curate whatever kind of life you want. Like, I know a lot of people who go to that type of lifestyle and have that. I wouldn't even fit in anyway, so I don't even get invited, you know? Like, it's not – I don't think they look at me and go, we want her.
Just, like, picking and choosing which ones are gonna align with you, right?
Yeah, and also, you know, being in the world of, like, being around creators a lot, like, it is kind of a strange thing because I haven't always been a creator anyway. So sometimes I feel like for a lot of young people who this has been their whole life, they operate very differently in the way they socially interact. And like,
interesting.
It's very different than like more like, I'm a Midwestern person who's like kind of like, there are people who have lived very more basic lives, which my life was before, and then people who like only know this very intense lifestyle. And sometimes people can be amazing and super nice and open, and other times they just like won't even look at you. And I'm like, I don't care to be in either of these situations right now. So I just never go to those things.
Yeah. And I feel like that's kind of the nice thing about being sober is like, when I was drinking, I would go to anything because it was like an excuse to drink. Like, I wasn't that choosy. And now I'm so much more like, I love my downtime more, and like, I don't need to put myself in those situations.
Yeah, you're not just going for like free booze, open bar.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my gosh. I was looking back on your some of your posts from the last few months, and something I think you posted like at the end of this year was talking about how like for so long your like identity was wrapped up in like recovery, whether from like eating disorders, addiction, and that you're kind of like in this different place now where that's not so much like your identity. So like, what is life like for you right now at like, you know, close to 4 years sober?
Yeah, I mean, it's also really interesting that I felt that way, and I still do. Like, I'm not struggling with those things per se. And the life journey is so fun because it'll surprise you. Like, never did I ever think I'd be doing EMDR therapy and working through that and documenting that and like making a lot of my content again about that. And that's kind of the fun part of embracing wherever you're at. So at that time, I was like, I don't want to talk about this stuff. And I still don't. I don't talk about the body image stuff as much really ever, or the eating disorder, because it's not part of my journey. Like, and everyone's different. Like, there are some people who have fully recovered but make their content about being a tool for people. I think the way that I have enjoyed conducting my life is showing people just whatever's actually reflecting my lived experiences. And if I'm not going through it, it's not part of my rhetoric. It's not part of my what I'm putting out there right now. And that's not always great in terms of like your niche, you know, like you don't even talk about it anymore. And like, that's fine though, because I don't think that's realistic to always reintroduce topics of things you've actually already healed from. And maybe you'll want to remind people who follow you or new people come in, but giving yourself the freedom, because you are just a person, not just like a creator, like, if you enjoy giving all the tools, like I enjoy talking about what I'm learning from EMDR. So like whatever you like, and I like talking about like what I drink instead of alcohol, whatever, and things like that. So I think it is strange to think how much I struggled with stuff and needed to talk about it. But I'm kind of doing that now with like whatever's now.
Right. Yeah. It's not always the hardest
choice, I guess, in terms of content strategy.
But I think it is because it's authentic. Like it's authentic to where you're at right now.
True. Yeah. We all don't know what we're doing. Well, you might know what you're doing. I don't really.
I definitely don't know what I'm doing.
And that's
figuring it out as we go.
Yes.
What would you say? So if someone is listening and they are thinking of getting sober, or maybe they're like early in it, like what would you say to that person?
You definitely don't have to go cold turkey, because I know that is crazy and that is not a gold standard by any means. I also didn't think I was going to go cold turkey. I really just went with my feelings. So if I wanted to taper off, I would have tapered off. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to keep doing it for a month, I would have. So I didn't have a strict rule. I wasn't planning on just quitting and all of a sudden waking up. It just happened that way. But mind you, I had done it for 10 years and it became so much of my life and I was exhausted and lying to myself and everyone around me. And I personally got tired. So I think the hard part is when you hear about people's recovery stories, you can start to compare yours.
Yeah.
And the point of it is that like, why? I've not lived your childhood. I've not lived your teenage years. I haven't felt the things you felt. I don't know what it's like to be in your body. So don't even think about what me or Maddie do or have done, but know what you want to be, where you want to be. Unfortunately, you know yourself the best. And the only thing you should do and can do is be honest with yourself. And you have to follow the truth, which sucks. But also it's so fun because life gets so much easier when you just go with where you want to really go. It's unfortunately simple.
That is so good. I love that. I love that so much. And I feel like you're just like such a good example of like you're sober and like I see you traveling, like you were in Japan last year. Mm-hmm. And like you're just like living your life as a sober person, like doing the things, not letting anything stop you, and like just modeling that is so inspiring for everybody. So I just love that.
Thank you. And you too, Maddie. And you know what's cool about it? I never think about it. I'm not kidding. Like at a restaurant, they'll be like, do you want a drink? And like, sure, alcohol was never my problem, but everyone else I'm around, like usually orders one. Yeah. I don't even notice them drinking it either. Like, I don't know. I don't. And like when people smoke, like a lot of people in my building actually smoke an awesome smut, I never feel like, oh, I want that right now.
I love
but
that.
But I used to. So like, yeah. Just trust the process.
That's the thing, right? Is that like, when we first quit, it's so on our radar and it's like very, at least for me, it was very like all consuming. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't imagine that it would ever feel any way other than that. But it's just trusting that like it does get easier. Like, when do you think that shift happened for you?
I think I had someone that was really close to me like in my life who would like still do it. Mm-hmm. And like they would do it around me. And I actually had to be like, hey, like, can you not? Or like maybe go outside. And like it was triggering for the first like year and a half, even though I didn't want to do it myself. And that person ended up stopping smoking weed too.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. But like for a long time, I had just I it was hard for me to be around it because I'm like, I also don't like being around people who are high and drunk. Mm-hmm. Just because, not that it's anything bad, it's just like I like living in reality. Like, and like genuinely, like, because I know what it's like on the other end. And so for me, I'm like, why are we together if we're not even the same planet? Like, it's not that I'm judging you, it's I know I was never in the same room as you anyway, so like why are we together?
Yeah, well, it's like if you're present, you're fully mm-hmm. present, you want to be with someone who also is.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand. And like when I was high, I didn't want to be around sober people either. So you shouldn't want to be around me.
Right.
That's weird.
Isn't it so funny? I was the exact same. Like when I was drinking, I was so uncomfortable with sober people being around me. So like, I get it when people feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like,
yeah. Did you have a lot of support generally speaking, from like the people close to you? How was that?
I really did. But you know, the people like in my family, like no one's going through it with you. Mm-hmm. Typically, usually. Right. So like, I felt like I had a lot of support and they thought it was really positive, but it's not like you're trekking along right along with someone's like parallel line. You know, it's really just you at the end of the day, just like with the validation from other people knowing they're proud of you and support you. It's like, it does matter and also like really doesn't. So much of it really has to come from like you just being into it, like interested in your journey and your own best friend. And I think that is the benefit of a sobriety journey, is you're kind of doing that probably for the first time in your life anyway, like not even having to do with the substances or the alcohol or the behaviors. It's like, when do we ever really channel being with ourselves like that? Yeah. There's no need.
Oh, I love that. That's so good. It really is. Like you're with, like without, you know, drinking or getting high or anything, you're really like with yourself. And that is an opportunity, like you said, to like be your own friend, like have your own back. And like, that was something that fueled me in my early days, was it became such a thing that I was so proud of. Like, even though it was hard, I would wake up and be like, oh my God, I'm so proud of myself. And that was like an emotion that I was like, I want to hold on to that. Like, I don't want to lose that.
Yes. And like, I remember too, like becoming my own friend or whatever. At first I was like, ugh, I hate her. I don't want to be friends with her. But that's because I wasn't who I knew I could be. So now I love being alongside myself because I am actually someone I'm proud of. Just like you were saying, by becoming it, you enjoy connecting with yourself more and more. So it makes sense that in the depths of getting drunk or getting high or eating disorder, you don't want to be around yourself because it's not even you anyway.
So yeah, like you're not a version of yourself that you're proud of. No. There's like so much like shame and like icky feelings.
It's all
and
hiding.
Yeah. And you're like, when you're drunk or high or whatever, you're like not yourself. You're maybe doing, saying things you regret about, spiraling about it the next day. Like, it's not fun to be with yourself when you're in that cycle.
No. And I just never imagined my life not smoking weed. So it's crazy to even like, you know, like it was just me.
Yeah.
It was just me.
Yeah. Isn't that such a good feeling? I feel the same. Like, I never imagined I could not drink. Like, that was unfathomable. And then when you do that, you're like, oh my God, I did something that I never would have thought was possible.
It is. And sometimes I go on the flip side and go, it's really not that big of a deal. You're sober. Like, relax. You know, because I hope you don't do that, but I do that. Like, I go, wow, you were just like so self-congratulatory. But that's when the outside sources help give you a reality check.
Yeah.
That's when validation is a big tool, because most people who struggle with addictive behaviors have very low sense of self-esteem and self-pride. So the validation and support is necessary to remind you of why this is cool, why this is good, because you're just doing it and you're like, I'm a piece of shit. I don't care. Whatever. Cool. You're not smoking weed. Great. No, it is great. Like, it's very good for you.
Yes. And it's like, it's also not the norm. Like, the norm is not to be sober. And so that does make it something cool to be proud of, right? Like, most people are not sober.
Oh, every time I go to the doctor, you know, when they go like,
oh my God, yeah.
And like, do you smoke? And I go, no. And they're like, really? I'm like, no. And I'm like, isn't that crazy? Because there's not one.
Because it's not normal.
I went to a doctor's appointment on Wednesday and she was like, I've never met anyone who doesn't do any of it.
Wow.
And this was like a nice doctor's office.
Right. And like, think of all the people she talks to for you to be the only one.
I know. And then she was like, but you drink caffeine, right? And I was like, oh yeah. And she's like, okay, never mind. I was like, yeah, no, I do. Like, I'm a person.
Coffee, I will never let go. It's actually funny because I do drink like 5 coffees a day. Like, it is out of hand, but I'm so at peace with that.
You know what? Life, we're not supposed to be perfect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like, if you ever want to change that or not, okay, you're not dying. So whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that serious.
Exactly.
It's not
that serious. We can pick our battles. It's not wine. Like, I'm
you're
great.
Not drinking alcohol. Yeah. Let's just take that and let's take that as a win and move on.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love it. This was so freaking fun, Kelly. I've been so, so excited. Thank you so much for coming on.
God, I loved our conversation. Thank you for having me. And for anyone listening, like, good on you for even wanting to listen to a podcast like this, because let me tell you, I don't think that I was ready, but who you are listening right now, you are in such a better place than where Maddie and I probably both were. You are seeking, you are trying, you're not even trying, you're doing. And one of the best things my therapist taught me is actually trying is lying. You're either doing it or you're not. So for anyone who's like teetering on should I not, just like take that with you. And it's not supposed to be mean. It's like, yeah, like I'm just going to do.
I love that. And it's so true. Like, I think that like questioning phase, like I was like listening to things and like looking on sober Instagrams way before I was ready to do it. And it's like, even just that alone takes so much courage to even like begin to look at it is so, so scary.
Yeah, and be proud that you're interested and curious, and also like it's not that serious. Like you don't have to do the deepest research. Just like just jump in and like see how you feel. And like there's nothing wrong with relapses. That's mostly extremely common, and like everything that happens is like part of the process as long as you have a goal.
100%. It took me a few tries for sure, and that just was like the process.
You're just gonna rid of something that's your whole self. What?
Right? I know.
No. So don't do what I did. No, I mean, if you want to do it, it was great. But like, that's not.
You're like one of the, you're one of the rare ones that just like had one try, which is amazing. Like that's so cool.
And it doesn't have to be like that. Just do whatever. But like here, you guys, you know what you need to do. Okay. That's it.
I love it. Thank you so much. So much, Kelly. Tell everyone where they can like find you, follow you, anything you want to promote.
Yes, it's so easy to find me. Just look up Kelly and the letter U on all platforms, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. And this year I am also launching something really big. So you can keep up with that and any announcements that come up. Yeah. Kelly U. And you can always send me a DM. I love connecting with you guys. Never be shy. And thank you, Maddie. Love Maddie.
Aw, love Kelly. Thank you so, so much. I'll link everything that you mentioned in the show notes. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Be sure to give Kelly a follow and keep up with everything she's doing. If you enjoyed this episode, then feel free to share it with a friend or share it on social media. Rate, review, subscribe. Follow me on Instagram at happiestsober and subscribe to my weekly newsletter at happiestsober.com. New episodes come out every Tuesday, so I'll chat with you next week. I hope you have an amazing week. Remember that life's happiest when you're sober. Bye.
It's easy to blame ourselves for our struggles with alcohol. We see people around us being able to control their drinking without any consequences, yet no matter what we try, we can't seem to figure it out for ourselves. My name is Jillian Teets, and I am the host of the Sober Powered Podcast, where I use my biochemistry background to explain the latest research in addiction and help you understand both why you drink the way you do and how to develop the skills and mindset you need to find freedom from alcohol. I discuss topics like why we think about our drinking 24/7, why we have no off switch, and why we crave alcohol. If you're struggling with your drinking or you know someone who is, then I hope that you will check out the Sober Powered Podcast. New episodes every Friday. See you there.